On this week's Radio Today programme, a fascinating insight into the world of American breakfast radio. We've got news and David Lloyd's radio moments as well. But first, he's one half of the Los Angeles duo Kevin and Bean, who've been waking up listeners to K-Rock for more than 25 years. He's a member of the US Radio Hall of Fame, and he was born in England. He is Bean. And this is how their show began on Tuesday this week, with the remarks of Sarah Palin on their minds about how immigrants should, quote, speak American.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
One, two, three.
Bad boy!
Four, five, six.
B.I.G. Ah!
This is Phil Lowe. Lost, confused, distracted, dreary, disturbed. I guess that's it.
Down the cheer up. Things ain't so bad.
Club going up on a Tuesday. Got your girl in the cut and she choose. Club going up on a Tuesday.
And now.
You know, I think we can send a message and say, you want to be in America? A, you better be here legally or you're out of here. B, when you're here, let's speak American.
Our feature presentation.
She's got a good point. I mean, we should speak American, right?
Absolutely.
I'm with her. Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It's Tuesday. It is September the 8th.
She wants to be, I don't know if you guys watched that interview with former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin. She is gunning for a cabinet position in the Trump administration.
Okay.
So we're going to get two for the price of one.
Sure.
And she wants to be energy secretary so that she can dismantle the energy department.
What?
Yes, that's what she said. Said she wants to be the energy secretary so she can close it down.
The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
And here he is. It's the American radio legend that is Bean. It's Gene Baxter. He's on the radio every morning in Los Angeles, so that's why he's in Seattle. Bean, how does that work? How do you do a breakfast show for 4 hours for the good people of Los Angeles from over 1,000 miles away?
Well, let me first say what a thrill to be on the podcast. I've been a big fan for a long time, so it's a real honor to talk to you, Trevor Dan. And secondly, the answer to your question is the same way you and I are having a conversation right now, and it sounds to the listener like we're in the same room. Technology is a wonderful thing, and it has made it possible to do radio broadcasts from anywhere in the world.
Because people over here say that sometimes it's difficult to do networking of radio stations that are even 25 or 35 miles apart. I mean, can you talk realistically to a breakfast audience in a, I mean, it's not a different time zone, but it's, you know, the weather might be really different. They might be supporting different sports teams. You know, how do you make that work?
That's a legitimate question, and it's certainly one that we had. It's a conversation we had a lot in 1999 when I decided to make the move. I had one thing going for me, Trevor, and that is that I did live in Los Angeles. I'm not broadcasting to a city I know nothing about. I know the traffic and the intersections and the teams and the colleges and all the things that are cultural touchstones that you would make a reference to on the radio, because I lived there for 9.5 years. And thanks to the advent of the internet, I can still read the Los Angeles Times newspaper every day online if I want. I can still watch segments of broadcasts from local Los Angeles television stations. I can be up to speed with who the local personalities are there. So it's really easier than ever before to do that. But I do think it helped me that I had real world experience living there before I moved.
So why did you move?
I never really liked Los Angeles. I know that sounds strange because so many people think of it as the ultimate place to live. There are so many Southern Californians who will say they would never live anywhere else in America. I've been lucky enough to live all over the world and all over the country, and Los Angeles was just never a good fit for me. I loved the job that I had, and I enjoyed the people that I worked with. But once I got off the air at 10, I wasn't that crazy to be someplace. The traffic is every bit as bad as you've heard, Trevor. It's very, very hot there, and those are two of my least favorite things. So I had the opportunity to think about moving someplace else, and I really, the job is portable at this point, so I chose Seattle, Washington.
Now, K-Rock, as its letters suggest, is or has been historically a rock music station, but as we know from listening to American radio when we go over there, often breakfast shows are not like the rest of the station output. So how do you and Kevin put together your show, and how does it fit in with the rest of the K-Rock output?
That's a great question. For your listeners who haven't heard of K-Rock, it's very much like the soon-to-be-gone XFM in London, which is it's an alternative rock music station, and all the attitude that goes along with alternative music stations that you would expect. Everything's hip and cool. You make fun of the things that are popular. You're down on the Kardashians. You're not into the Justin Bieber. But when you're doing the breakfast show, you bring up a great point. You want to be much more mass appeal to that. And we can still have that attitude. We can still talk about those things in our own way, making fun of them sometimes, but it's definitely a much more general interest show than I think you get around the clock on the rest of the day parts. So we invite people who may not even like rock music, people who may not even listen to K-Rock the rest of the day, to come on in and enjoy our show. And I think a lot of them have found, yeah, we do hear from a lot of people who only listen to Kevin B, not K-Rock the rest of the day, because we are, I think, casting a wider net.
And is the Kevin and Bean Show, in your view, a comedy program? Is that how you see it in, you know, when you put it together in your minds? Do you think you are a pair of comedians?
The goal is certainly to be entertaining. As you know, that doesn't always mean being funny. You can be entertaining by talking about something that's very human, something that's very relatable, something that's very poignant. We try to check all the boxes and offer a show every day that is going to make somebody like it. Somebody's going to take something away from that program that they enjoy, even if they don't laugh about it. We have a lot of guests on who are talking about serious things or not automatically funny things. We still try to make it an entertaining interview for people listening.
You've probably heard, because I know you follow what's going on over here, that Chris Moyles, who left Radio 1 several years ago now, probably because the then new management thought he was a bit old, he's coming back to do the breakfast show on Radio X, which is the new name for XFM. How do you feel about doing the breakfast show on a station for listeners who are younger than you are? Because, you know, let's face it, like me, you'll never see 50 again.
That's a great question that obviously, if you had asked me when I started the job, when I was hired at age 29, if I would still be doing the show 26 years later, I would have said absolutely not. My expectation going into the job was that I am going to age out of this. Most people do want their personalities on air. Even if they're not literally the same age as the listeners in the target demographic, they certainly need to be able to relate to them. And I think Kevin and I have both been, maybe because we're so juvenile at heart, Trevor, I don't know, we've always been able to still be interested in those, so many of those things that 18-year-old, 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds are interested in. So we never got to a point that I think some presenters get to where they think, well, I don't care about the kids anymore. I'm not interested in that stuff that they're talking about. We still are really entertained by some of those things, and we find ways to incorporate them into our show. And we have a lot of listeners who are still in that age group of 18 to 24.
And do you have bosses who are like the traditional way American radio bosses are portrayed to us, who are a real kind of hire and fire and don't talk too long and, you know, they're on your back all the time? Or do they give you a certain amount of creative freedom?
I would say the answer to that question is both ways. We do get more creative freedom, I think, than other shows do. There's a real epidemic in this country of tamping down the disc jockeys as much as possible. There are a lot of people who are on the radio in America who are supposed to talk for 10 seconds or less. We're lucky that we were able to do a breakfast show. We're able to do breaks that are 8 to 10 minutes long, four times an hour. So we do have a lot of room, enough room to hang ourselves, as the expression goes. And they keep an eye on us. I mean, they would like to keep things moving. And of course, there's lots of research and studies and surveys and focus groups, and we do hear that information as well. But we're a mature show who's been on for a long time, has been successful for a long time. We're currently number one in our target demographic for advertisers, 25 to 54. So I think they do trust us a little bit to know what works for our show. But yeah, absolutely. There are always things they'd like to see you do differently. And believe me, lots of people who have never been on the radio before are very keen to offer you advice on how you should do a radio show.
When you're in the studio, of course, you're not in the studio together, but there's Kevin down there in LA and you up there in Seattle. Who else is involved? You know, are you producing your own show, or have you got a team of people helping you? How does that work?
We're very lucky that we have, especially for radio in the 21st century, we have a very large staff. We do have a producer. We have an assistant producer. We have somebody who just handles the audio imaging, who does commercials and cuts up things for us. We also do have a board op. We have a person who does entertainment news and voice work for us on the show. We have somebody who answers the phone. I think all told on our staff, we have 10 people, which may be a record for commercial FM morning shows in America in 2015. We're very, very lucky. But all those people work hard and they all contribute to the success of the show.
And are you taking the show online? You know, do you have a popular podcast? You know, that's the touchstone these days, isn't it?
Our podcast does well. I mean, it shows up in the iTunes Top 100 every week. And we do the anecdotal evidence that I get from email and hearing from listeners on social media is that the podcast gets more popular every year. We hear from more and more people around the country and around the world who listen to us that way. And it just makes sense. I mean, the beautiful thing about podcasts, as you know, I'm a fan of your podcast and I listen in Seattle, Washington. Well, we have people who listen everywhere from Taiwan to Sydney to the Kevin and Bean Show. They'll never be in America. They'll never hear K-Rock, but somehow they stumbled upon the Kevin and Bean Show and they enjoy it. So why not? We'll take listeners from anywhere. The question, as you have so often asked, is how do we monetize that?
The young man that everyone was talking about on Friday is named Robert Wright. He gets us started on today's Tuesday Kevin and Bean Show. He lives in Fresno. And he's the guy, Kevin, I know you saw him on the news, who ran into a burning building to save his ribs. Now, what I love about him is that, and I don't know if you noticed this, I don't know if you watched the story or not, is that he was not involved in the fire. He lives in a six-unit apartment complex in Fresno. The fire broke out in the building next door. Coincidentally, he, at the time of the fire breaking out and the police and fire responding, was cooking ribs in his apartment. It was 2:30 in the morning.
At 2:30 in the morning.
Are there any circumstances that you can imagine where you would be cooking ribs at 2:30 in the morning?
I can't imagine, because even if you stay up late, you like to party or whatever, don't you eat like a little earlier and then maybe drink?
It wasn't for work. Like he brought it into work.
He didn't say it was for work. It was just he was cooking his ribs.
He was hungry. He says he was hungry. He says I'll play the interview from the guy.
No, he's so good.
I think you'll fall in love with a man, right, man? You think you'll fall in love with a man? You think you'll enjoy hearing him, man? Let's see, man.
Oh, man, it all went down, man. I stayed right next door, man, from the thing that happened, man, the barbecue, man. I was barbecuing, man. I seen some fire just come out the window, man. The window busted out, man. Only thing I think first, man, make sure the ribs is right. And I ran in and got my family, man. Brung everybody out safely, man. I carry everybody out myself, man. You know what I mean? I'm keep this PG, everybody, myself, man. I did that.
By the way, to Mr. Wright's credit, he did take the people out of the apartment and make sure they were out first before he went back in for the ribs. So it's not like it was ribs first and then girlfriend and kids second.
Okay, but hold your thought for a second. Mm-hmm. His first thought was, I got to make sure these ribs is right.
Yes, that was his first thought. But then he thought better of it.
So here's the thing. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is that you were actually born over here. So how long did you spend in England?
I lived in England on and off for the first 6 years of my life. My father was a young Navy man who was stationed in London and met a girl and who was born and raised in Islington and married her. And I was born there. And we lived there for about the first 6 years of my life. Then we lived around the world with my dad's service duty in the Philippines. We lived in Spain. We lived in Hawaii. We didn't move back to the mainland United States until I was 15 years old.
So did you hear and can you remember any British radio from those very early years?
I don't remember it myself, but my parents have told me that I was one of those kids whose ears perked up very young at music on the radio. I loved listening to the radio. And my earliest memories from being a little older than that and living at armed forces bases around the world is listening to the Armed Forces Radio of the United States and hearing some of those syndicated programs that were sent out from the U.S. People like Casey Kasem, people like Charlie Tuna, those are the kinds of shows. Paul Harvey, when he used to do news for the Armed Forces Service, those are the things that I remember most. My earliest radio memories are hearing those shows when I was 7, 8, 9 years old.
And in the intervening years, Bean, have you been back to the UK very often? Have you heard much of what we do on the radio?
Yes, absolutely. And with the advent of streaming and podcasts and social media, I'm able to listen to as much British radio as I listen to American radio now. I come back quite frequently. I still have lots of family there, lots of aunts and uncles. By the way, my uncle and his family that I spend almost every Christmas with up in Welwyn Garden City, lifelong Arsenal fan. I knew you'd be happy about that, Trevor.
That is very good news. Did I hear you say Welwyn Garden City?
Yes, I bet I pronounced that wrong, didn't I?
There was a touch of the Dionne Warwicks about that. No, it's Welwyn Garden City. I'm sorry.
I accept your scorn.
So you do come over here. What do you think of British radio when you hear it now?
I don't think there's anything that American radio is doing as well as British radio is doing right now. I think there are so many great stations on the air and on the DAB in your country with the interaction that they have with the audience, with the intelligence of the presenters, with the enthusiasm that they show for the music, with the different ways that they interact with the audience and package the music together. I just think it's great. I mean, a station like Radio 2 is something that I look at and I just marvel. Something like that could never exist in America. But it's like 24 hours a day of listening to a top-notch morning show, and you have no idea whether they're going to play a Frank Sinatra record or a Sex Pistols record. And it all somehow works. I mean, it really is a miracle of modern broadcasting. I'm enjoying the heck out of the stations that I hear. It's so much fun to listen.
It is amazing, isn't it, Radio 2? Because it defies all the advice you get from radio consultants about being niche and being consistent and, you know, all that stuff they tell us. And there's Radio 2 being just willfully obscure sometimes, just following one thing with exactly the thing that the consultants tell you you shouldn't follow it with. And yet there it is. It's the number one station in the country.
Yes, and I thought about that just this morning or last night for me. I fell asleep listening to Radio 2 last night, and they read an email from a listener who was mentioning a member of the Specials who had died. The trombone player for the Specials had died. And the presenter who was on went on talking about the Specials and what a contribution he had made, and ended up playing a couple of records from the band. And I was thinking how lovely that was and how timely it was and how personal it was and how sincere it seemed. And, you know, K-Rock is a station that was one of the first to play the Specials in America. I guarantee that won't get mentioned on our air today. We don't take that attention to detail that they seem to do on so many of the stations in Britain. I mean, they really figure out a way to package the music where it feels like, wow, we have a shared history, shared experience, and the listeners are kind of going through the same thing that the presenters are and even guiding us.
So, Bean, do you feel in any sense English? I mean, obviously, you know, if you're here for 6 years, it would be a little bit unlikely. But, you know, when you come home, do you feel as though it is home?
I absolutely do. And I come so frequently now, usually two or three times a year I try to come when I can. And the more time I spend with my relatives there, the more memories that I make there, the more I want to spend more time there. I mean, that is the ultimate goal. Whenever I'm able to pack it up here at K-Rock in America is to hopefully either retire in Great Britain or have that be the next phase of my career and find some work at one of the stations there. I mean, I would love to do that. That would be a dream come true.
I should introduce you to our very good friend, Graham Mack, who runs a station just north of Wellington City called Bob FM. That'd be right up your street.
It's funny you should mention that, because thanks to you tweeting about me, Graham Mack is now following me. I am now following him. So we are now fast Twitter friends.
That's how social media works. Isn't that fantastic? So we might see you sometime over here. In the meantime, just tell me a bit about how you and Kevin, having worked together for so many years, how do you work as a double act off air? You know, how do you plan tomorrow's show? I imagine, you know, we're talking here, it's the evening hour time, you've just finished your show. What do you know already about what you're going to do tomorrow?
The best piece of advice I ever got in terms of doing a morning radio show was from my current program director at K-Rock, Kevin Weatherly, who said, look, prepare every break for tomorrow's breakfast show. Literally sit down with a piece of paper and write 6:05, 6:10, 6:15, 6:20, fill out the whole sheet. You can throw the entire thing out tomorrow if you want, but at least you know when it gets to be 7:15 tomorrow morning, you have something planned that you can do. So that's the mindset that we take into planning the following day's show. We don't leave, we leave lots of flexibility, but we have something that we can count on if we need it. So we try to plan each day's show during the show that we're doing. During the songs that we're playing or the commercials that we're playing, whenever we have downtime, we make a suggestion. Ooh, tomorrow morning at 8:05, let's call this guy, or let's play audio from that, or let's do a phone topic on that. So we fill in the whole schedule during the show. And then when we get off the air at 10 o'clock, then we have a meeting with the whole staff and we flesh it out. What production pieces do we need? What audio from the last time they were on the show do we want? What do we want to prepare to do with that guest, for instance? So then we put all the pieces together so that we all have a job when we go off our separate ways. You're going to watch this. You're going to write that game. You're going to do this bit. And then when we come back the next day, we've got everything in order and we're ready to go. It's a pretty streamlined process. It doesn't take us a lot of time, but I think that's partly just because we're in the rhythm of the thing. We've been doing it for so long.
Do you think that American breakfast radio, in fact, American radio, as exemplified by the kind of Howard Stern kind of shock jocks that we hear and up to a point yourselves, is it a bit more crude, a bit harder than what we would be used to in the UK, where we're all, you know, we're a bit soft, really, aren't we? A bit lovey?
Yes, you are the British baking show, and we are, and we are. What's that show where the guy screams at people about their cooking? That's more the American way. I think you're right about that, Trevor. I thought about that. I read our mutual friend David Lloyd's book earlier this year, "The How to Make Great Radio," which is such a wonderful, wonderful read. And I was really surprised to see the chapter on how many restrictions there are on British broadcasters in terms of the types of things you can say about politics, the types of things that you can say, even in making fun of celebrities. It seems like you are kind of tamped down a little bit with what you can say on the radio, and it's way more open than that here. And I think, look, you've probably met a lot of Americans. Everyone listening has met a lot of Americans as tourists. They don't always represent as well. But I think in general, we are a louder people, and I think we are people who say what's on our mind. And sometimes that can make for very compelling radio.
Well, Bede, it's been fantastic to talk to you. I wish this could go on forever, but you know the world of the podcast. We have to bring it to an end at some point. I do hope that you'll come and see us. You should perhaps, I think, do an event, you know, for the Radio Academy or for somebody when you're over here. You know, just come and talk in the back room of a pub for a few people who want to come and meet you. I think that'd be fantastic.
I would enjoy that. I always have a great time when I visit, and the, you know, the more radio people I get to know over there, the more fun it is for me to visit, and I'm so glad to have made your acquaintance. I love the podcast, and we should give a shout out to our friend Larry Gifford, who hooked us up, who does a phenomenal podcast for American radio called The Radio Stuff, and you guys are both doing excellent work. You're must listens every week, Trevor.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, and coming from you, that makes me feel very good. And as you say, well done to Larry, who's now finding himself the groover in Vancouver.
That's right.
How did that happen? Bean, Gene, thank you so much for talking to us. We will talk to you soon. That was Gene Baxter, Bean of Kevin and Bean on K-Rock in LA. You can listen to his podcast anywhere in the world. It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. Here is Roy Martin with some news.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. So, after 6 months of speculation, Global finally confirmed Radio X is real and Chris Moyles is indeed lined up for The Breakfast Show starting September 21st. Extensive coverage, if you haven't seen it already, now online at Radio Today. Palm 105.5 is also being rebranded. It's seeing out its last days at the moment as the parent company Celador Radio get ready to rebrand it as, you guessed it, The Breeze. And also, talking of rebrands, in the West Midlands, Planet Rock has now gone and Absolute Radio is now broadcasting from a transmitter in Birmingham. That's the very latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Lavo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Can it really be 20 years since the birth of Heart in London?
Let's get the radio station started. Woo! There it is, the first song played on London's new Heart 106.2.
Those fingers,
a trivial pursuit question for the future, I have no doubt. It's 7:05. There are bags of people around the studio. It's chaos here. This is Gloria Estefan. It's too late on the new, the brand new Heart 106.2.
Heart 106.2, which launched in London 20 years ago this week and nearly wasn't called Heart at all. It became, though, the second Heart station. The other had launched this week the year before.
You're listening to test transmissions from Heart FM, the new soft rock station for Warwickshire and the West Midlands. Due to start broadcasting at 7 a.m. on September the 6th.
Happy birthday to the two original Hearts. 45 years ago this week, and what's in the news in Manchester?
BBC Radio Manchester makes news in its own right this morning
The station, broadcasting on VHF 95.1, came on the air 1 minute and 20 seconds ago and is now the largest in the country. The station has been built in 7 months at a capital cost of about £60,000 to £70,000, with a running cost in excess of £100,000 a year. The theme for the opening day is going to be a normal Thursday's broadcasts with some special events.
Happy birthday, BBC Radio Manchester, this week in 1970.
Well, here we are. We've arrived. The newest sound around.
He sounded as if he wanted to be somewhere else, didn't he? BBC Radio Norfolk was the first BBC local to broadcast in stereo, and the left and the right channels launched 35 years ago.
1980 radio is a world of complicated but versatile equipment, as you'll see shortly. But of course, the moment approaches when Radio Norfolk goes on the air for the very first time. It goes on the air via its nerve centre. The nerve centre, of course, is the studio. Come with me. And the man who's going to put Radio Norfolk on the air is my old friend John Mountford. Hello, John.
Hi, Ian.
How are you feeling?
Didn't he just put his head in a bucket? Oh, the magic of radio.
Hello, this is Radio Norfolk, your new neighbour.
Hello, Radio Norfolk, the first of a new tranche of BBC local stations coming on air this week in 1980. This week, 25 years ago, a commercial radio farewell.
And so there we are, with the time approaching 4 minutes past 12, amid the anticipation of the new sound coming in just over 3 weeks to Bristol and the County of Avon. That's GWR. Obviously just a hint of sadness as well. Can I remind you that test transmissions for GWR begin at 6 a.m. this morning. In the meantime, and indeed for the last time, this is Mark Seaman on behalf of all the Radio West staff and presenters, both past and present, wishing you a pleasant Monday and all the best for the future. Can I also thank you for your loyalty and your listenership over the past 4 years?
The end of Radio West in Bristol this week in 85. It eventually became Heart. Another short-lived commercial station was born this week in 81.
Monday morning with Chris Rea and Fool If You Think It's Over. We've just begun. A brand new radio station, a brand new week. It's a Monday morning. What a nice day today. I had a lot of requests in this week saying, please tell me, can we have the first request on Centre Radio? So I put them all in a hat and I've come out with the winner. And it's in fact a record for my big toe. And it's high. Good luck, Timmy. Hop to it.
The confident birth of Centre Radio in Leicester. It went bust 2 years later. From the press, and we have a cutting here from this week in 1967. It's that familiar photograph of the Radio 1 presenters on the steps of the church near Broadcasting House. The headline is Pirate Jockeys Join BBC. And it goes on to say, amongst the 30 or so names, there's a solid core of pirate disc jockeys who've come home to legality. They arrived, this article continues, at Broadcasting House dressed in very un-BBC outfits. Orange slacks, bearskin coats, gold embroidered jackets. There was a proliferation of beards. Some even wore suits. Determinedly in fashion, the BBC handed out lapel badges bearing such slogans as, I'm a Radio 1 Upman, and ring a 24/7 ding. 1956 now, and David Jacobs hosted his first Pick of the Pops.
Hello there. Well, as we've captured the air for the next hour and a bit, we hope we've captured you as well. And this is as good a place as any to remind you how we make up the hit parade on this programme. You know, we take the average of the placings in three leading musical papers.
All I remember is leaving the studio at the Television Centre after Jukebox Jury and coming up to Broadcasting House and presenting Pick of the Pops.
David Jacobs, who hosted his first Pick of the Pops on the Light programme this week 56 years ago, described as a selection from the latest gramophone records. On many old Bakelite radio sets, you'll see the word Droitwich on the tuning dial. And that was the site in Worcestershire of the largest UK transmitter. It came on air this week in 1934, carrying the national programme. But why the site at Droitwich?
They did a lot of experiments with the mobile transmitter to see what the sort of service area round about the Midlands. And it was realised they couldn't put a large transmitting station very close to Europe, to Birmingham. They'd searched around the various districts, including places like Barnt Green and so on, and finally came up with this site at Wychbold, which was ideally located. The site was chosen because it was central to the whole of the Midland region.
John Phillips speaking to me there. He was an engineer on site just after those wartime days. In 1992, another national station launched, this time on 11 FM transmitters.
This is an engineering test transmission in preparation for the new independent national radio service, Classic FM. Transmissions will be in stereo, and signal polarization is mixed.
Good morning and welcome to Britain's first national commercial radio station. This is Classic FM. I'm Nick Bailey, and this is George Frederick Handel.
23 years ago, the Birdsong stopped and Classic FM launched. So, with Marcia Sound launching in Wrexham 32 years ago...
Welcome to Marcia Sound. Your station, your sound.
Wogan announcing the end 6 years ago...
I was hoping to break it to you, my loyal listener, more gently.
The same week that Chris Moyles became the longest-serving Radio 1 breakfast jock.
Anyway, who'd have thought this would be the longest-running breakfast show on Radio 1? Not Tony Blackman, that's for sure.
Signal launching in Stoke 32 years ago.
From me, John Evington, a very good morning to you.
David Hamilton celebrating his 77th birthday.
It's David's daily dolly.
Newsbeat born 42 years ago. Newsbeat! And this song released 36 years ago. Even though it bloody well didn't. Those are this week's Radio
Moments. Thank you, David. Thank you, Roy. And, of course, special thanks to Gene Bean Baxter. You can take the boy out of Welwyn. I wonder if we'll ever hear him on a station in the UK. Next week, I'll be reporting from the Community Media Conference and from Next Radio, always my favourite UK radio event. Join me for that if you can. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. Farewell.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.